fellow veterans and friends of veterans, this is a wake-up call. Welcome to Veterans Revolution Radio, broadcast live from downtown Los Angeles, Skid Row Studios. We're at the belly of the beast, where the most populated area in the United States and perhaps the world for homeless people, and a vast majority of them are veterans. Make no mistake, we're in a state of emergency here. And while the VA officials, the politicians, and everybody is refusing to admit it, we have a serious problem with nearly 20,000 homeless veterans in Los Angeles County, the nation's capital for homeless veterans. Many of them are war injured and seriously disabled. This is the Veterans Revolution. It was organized to change what has been going on at the largest VA in the nation. That land was deeded in 1888 to be permanently maintained as a national home for disabled soldiers. Today there's a dog park and there's a public golf course. There's public theaters. Go down the list. The school, Brentwood School, one of the wealthiest private schools in the nation, has 21 acres with an athletic complex, off-limits to veterans. UCLA has 10 acres for a baseball diamond, off-limits to veterans. And again, we're the capital for homeless veterans. The land was donated by two families. One was a U.S. senator, John P. Jones. He was a senator from Nevada, made his wealth in silver mining, and bought premier land here in West Los Angeles from the ocean inward. His partner, she was a widow because he was a partner with her husband. He had passed on, but Arcadia B. DeBaker. And the two of them donated about 600 acres back in 1888. There was an act of Congress that preceded it. It was as clear as could be that this land was to be permanently maintained as a national home for our soldiers. And after the Civil War, the veterans from the Union War, getting older and all, that's how this came about, because they wanted to get them a home with a land where it was warm because of their declining health, but they didn't want to send them to Florida, down in the midst of the Confederates and all, so they established the first veterans home west of the Rockies. And the homes were first established through an act of Congress in 1865. In fact, it was the last act that President Lincoln signed, and he signed it the day before his second inauguration. Of course, he died about a month and a half later through an assassin's bullet. But it was at that time they were called the National Asylum for Soldiers. And they changed that in 1873 to a home because they knew that there should never be such a thing as a homeless veteran. Well, here we are today, 21st century, and we've got a $17 trillion national debt. Spend $2 trillion sending our young men and women to war over the past decade. And we have tens of thousands of homeless veterans as a result of that, of those wars and previous wars. Nearly half of all homeless veterans today are from the Vietnam War. In fact, according to John Rowan, the executive director, president, and CEO of Vietnam Veterans of America, has stated there are more homeless veterans today from the Vietnam War nationwide, about 60,000, than the 50,303 that were killed during the war. That is simply unacceptable on any terms, even coming close. They're old. I'm a Vietnam-era veteran. I'm 73. There's some older than me, some younger, and it rips your heart out when you come across a homeless veteran from the Vietnam War. And we cannot let happen to this young generation coming forward from the Iraqi war, the Afghanistan war, and let it happen to them what happened to our generation. That's why we formed the Old Veterans Guard. I'm almost the youngster, I guess, 73. We've got veterans. We lost several already over the last 7 years. Steve Palmer, 88. Newt Young was 85. Dick Breithaupt, 85. Dan Overmeyer, 85. What was in it for them? Think about it. Every Sunday, we'd rally outside the largest VA in the nation. There was nothing in it for them. It was about the future generations, and that's why we're still out here. We model ourselves after the Grand Army of the Republic, and that was the veterans from the Union War, Civil War, but they were the Union Army, the Confederate Army. And they were the ones that were instrumental in getting these homes built to begin with, and they were instrumental in getting this one built out here. Of course, nobody wants to talk about it. It's like they're the unsung heroes. And our guest tonight, Ted Hayes, and we're going to weigh into some serious things. Ted's going to bring a lot to the table right now because he's going to talk about the Civil War, and what we're talking about is what happened after. And we're going to dovetail back and forth into this, and we're going to bring this back into perspective. One of the things we were going to be talking about today is a new vision for the old home. It was called the Old Soldiers' Home because they were old. It's like we're the Old Veterans Guard. But the home itself is a national veterans' home, and we want a new vision. We have a new vision for it, to take it back and reinstate it as a home of great pride for our veterans and for all veterans, whether they're homeless or not, as a gathering place to be with friends and family. And we're looking forward to it. And I'd like to introduce Ted. I can't speak enough about Ted Hayes. It's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, we had a meeting down at the Patriotic Hall, and we stopped to have breakfast first, and there was a little restaurant off the side of the way, and I think there's three or four people. Ted Hayes. Hey, Ted, there's Ted Hayes. No matter where you go, everybody knows Ted Hayes, and it's an honor, a real honor to have Ted Hayes here, because there's one thing about Ted Hayes, he speaks the truth. You may not like the truth, but you better get used to it when you're around Ted. And I think that's been our mission. We say what we mean and mean what we say. And that's where we are tonight. And Ted, welcome aboard.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Commander. I appreciate it. And I'm honored to be on board with you tonight here on the program. But as far as telling the truth, yeah, I try to do as much as possible. You know, and I think what I'm trying to do with my more mature age now, is tell the truth in such a way that it's not too offensive, you know what I'm saying? Speak the truth in love, and when you see stupid things, idiotic things, you just want to blast out. But, I'm learning. So, we have to speak the truth because that is what will set us free. And that being that we are a Judaic Christian country, Jesus Christ said that the truth will set you free. And I think that's been a lot of the problem is people don't want to tell the truth about what they see right in front of them for whatever reason, whether it's because they are too ignorant to address it, or have the skills to address it, or they just don't care. You know, I'm hoping it's just that they feel they don't have the skills, because I said a while back to some folks when they questioned me about, you know, why don't people care about the homeless? And I said, well, it's not that they don't care, especially in America. Americans are very heartfelt people, made a lot of bad mistakes over the centuries, over the decades and generations. But Americans tend to have a willingness to learn. Sometimes we have to get hit pretty hard before we realize we better change gears. And we've, you know, come a long way learning things. And I think that if, I'm not going to say if, because it's my strategy to get the ideas that I believe that will properly address homelessness into the minds of the masses of the American people. And I think that they will hear. I think y'all will hear if you knew what to do. As long as people don't know what to do about something, they'll ignore it, they'll turn away, they won't do. But if they knew what to do, I believe people would do. So that's where I'm trying to posture myself.
Yeah, we were talking about that this evening. We were stuck in the
Los Angeles
freeway.
Who's freeway? Who called it a freeway? It's a freaking bondage way. Bondage
absolutely.
Alley.
Absolutely. Yeah, it took us an hour and a half. An hour and a half to go, 12 miles, I think it was, from West L.A. over here. But as you look around, the many, 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 many cars, and each one of them have many, many, many things on their minds.
That's right.
And each one has a family, if you will. They have some connection there. They have jobs. They have all these commitments
issues
and obligations that they have to tend to.
Right.
And therefore, the bigger issues that are supposed to be governing us on our behalf as our, for our pursuit to happiness, it's not being done.
No.
And therefore, they have essentially, you know, they're sitting there and say, what can I say or do?
Exactly.
And and so we are grateful for this opportunity here with Skid Row Studios to be able to reach out, and we want to grow that from here. But you know, you've been a long time champion of the homeless. You yourself were homeless.
The 30th year.
Yeah. And there's probably nobody that knows and understands it better. As before we came
can't
in
touch
here,
me. Can't touch me on it.
We were driving through Skid Row, and I beg everybody listening, if you're in the Los Angeles, drive through there. Drive through there.
Yeah.
And ask yourself why, how.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How does this even allow to exist in this great nation, in one of the greatest cities? And it tears your heart out.
Yeah.
It tears your heart out to see these people. And by the way, kid, what was the race of most of those people that we saw today?
You know, you know, folks, apparently the population, the general population in Los Angeles, the black Angelenos, African-Americans, we even call us. I call us descendants of chattel slaves and Skid Row survivors. I'm Skid Row. Jim Crow survivors. We're only 11% of the city population, but yet in downtown, in Central City East, ground zero of the homeless capital of America and comparatively the world, 95% of the people you see on the sidewalks are black men.
Mm-hmm.
Men.
Mm-hmm.
And then women.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hispanics and a few Asians and a Jew here too, and some white folks here and there. But it's primarily black men and then black women. And you know, Bob, folks, there's a, check it out, go on YouTube, not YouTube, but Google. Google up. 1.5 million black men are missing in America. 1.5 million, they say, are missing. That's what they can count. And they're either dead, kidnapped, hidden, homeless, in prison. Probably a lot of them are homeless because a lot of these guys, the black men, they find themselves in a condition where they have two or three babies, or two or three different women perhaps, and there's alimony, child support coming at them. So the best thing for them to do is disappear. And where's the best place to disappear? Homelessness. Mm-hmm. They don't have to bother you there. Mm-hmm. You see, keep your nose clean, you'll be all right. You're not going to starve to death. And that's why it's very hard. As folks, look, I know y'all put a lot of money out there, federal government money and your private hard-earned money, into homeless services programs. And you mean well. But you know what? You're wasting your money because the majority of the programs are good. They work. They are definitely workable. They're successful. But the problem is once the vet or the homeless person goes through the program, get all cleaned up and disciplined, when they get back to go back into mainstream, they find out things are worse than what they were before they were kicked out of mainstream. And it's more difficult. And so they say, you know what? I'm going back. And so what happens is after a while, when outreach goes to some of these cats on the street corner in their nice condo encampments, in street and cardboard condos, they say, hey, brother, hey, guy, you want to get off the streets and get a job and be a part of society again? It's like, you out your mind? Are you crazy? You think I'm crazy, don't you? Because I'm out on the sidewalk. You think I'm mentally ill, don't you? No, you're crazy because you're stuck in that freaking rat race. You got to pay taxes. You got to pay utilities. You got to pay child support, alimony. Man, police, traffic.
Well, are you saying then it is better to be on Skid Row?
Yes, man.
Oh, come on, Dad.
That is the mindset. See, folks, what a lot of folks don't realize, I went to be homeless on purpose. To smell it, feel it, taste it, see it, experience it. To find out where it comes from, why, and to investigate whether there is a way out of it or not. And I had a chance to learn something about human nature that a lot of people don't really get. And the fact of the matter is human beings tend to, no matter what color, race, ethnicity are, we have been given the wonderful gift of survival. That's the first law of nature. Self-preservation. When we realize we cannot get out of certain pains and bad situations, guess what we do? We do what babies do when you don't change your diapers after a long while. They adapt to the filth. And the homeless guys who are out there now in them encampments, I'm telling you, I know them. They are like slaves on the plantation that inadvertently stumbled off the plantation. And when they got out there in them swamps or wherever they were, and they tasted what it meant to be free, they realized, you know what? I would rather die in freedom in this filthy swamp than to go back and be a slave. And see, my ancestors used to sing a song, folks. They say, I'd rather be dead and buried in my grave than to live my life on my knees as a slave.
Yeah. Well, but
give me liberty.
Yeah.
Or give me death.
Yeah. But let's address, because this is the Veterans Revolution Radio, and I want to stick on to veterans.
Sure, absolutely.
Because.
But they're caught in that too, though.
Okay. But I will disagree when you talk about veterans who have served this country who have their minds destroyed and there's no safety net. And they're out on the streets crying for help. I run in too often. And we have a home over here that was deeded as a home.
Right.
And we have dog parks. We have all these other
parades
things.
Okay. And all that stuff. Yeah. Close to okay. I've seen it.
All right. Well we're going to take it back because absolutely. I'm not buying into that these guys want to be on the street and live in the filth.
No, you misunderstand what I'm saying, Bob. You misunderstand what I'm saying. As I said, all the programs are good. They are workable.
Well, I disagree with that.
Fine.
Yeah.
My experience is that they're workable. Problem is, they've had nowhere to transition these people into where they can live a safe, secure, stressless lifestyle.
Well, but let's go to the issue they have right now, which is this housing first, which is, here, Ted, here's the set
that
of keys.
That doesn't work.
Okay,
that's
what I'm saying.
That's why we came up with the Dawn Village concept.
Okay.
As a stepping stone to that.
Okay, but Ted, this is what's out there today, and
right.
That's why we have to address what's here today.
Right.
We have a home over here. They right. don't want, now, the L.A. Neighborhood Community Council,
mm-hmm.
Coalition.
Right.
As you know, you were here when
right.
Terrence Gomes,
right. mm-hmm.
the president, 96 communities in this city of Los Angeles agreed, voted on a motion
right.
that this city is in a state of emergency for homeless veterans,
right.
okay? And they call it a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that we need to, the city, the mayor, and mm-hmm. the VA need to unify and build and establish
right.
a crisis over here.
Right.
Not give somebody a welfare
a key and
check.
Send them off somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Bring them in like a triage mm-hmm. fashion and say, mm-hmm. okay, Ted, by the way, I see you're from Des Moines, Iowa. What do you, you know, would mm-hmm. you be willing to go back to your family? Well, if I can afford a trip. Well, we're going to give you.
Right.
We're going to take
right.
you back to right. integrate you with your family right. where you go. L.A. is a different animal completely.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like any other city
right.
where you lived there and became homeless.
Right.
Most people come in here.
From outside.
Come outside mm-hmm. with big dreams. This
That's
is
right.
a city of dreams.
That's
and
right.
it's. A smart person can fall in the cracks real quick.
That's right. Once yeah. you go through, you're through.
Yeah.
Hard to get out.
Yeah. And so what, you know, I don't have any answers. We talked. You've got some answers about Skid Row over there. But we've got a situation right here in Los Angeles with that national home.
Right.
I'd like to address that and how we can go in and get veterans. Because I right. believe this. There's one thing that when I talk to a homeless veteran.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, are you a veteran? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When did you serve? You know, yeah, certain mm-hmm. questions, mm-hmm. like, and what unit were you in? What was your MOS, your military occupational specialty? And you ask somebody, what was your MOS? And they say, what do you mean? They say, hey, you're not a veteran. Okay, don't try to spoof me.
Right.
There's certain questions
right.
you can lead them on.
Right.
Without fail,
mm-hmm.
every time I run into a veteran and talk mm-hmm. with them, did you enjoy your military experience? And without fail, they almost always say, it was the best time of my life.
Wow.
Why did you get out? Well, I had different plans. I was going to get married, and that
right.
didn't work out, and this
right.
didn't work out. And I'll never forget, when it was about a couple of years ago, actually, where we protest out. And I crossed the street. I saw a person laid flat out on the sidewalk across the street, the shopping cart. So I ran across, almost got hit. You know, Wilshire's a busy street. I wasn't going to go through the stoplight
right.
routine. I ran straight over as a person in a state of emergency.
Right.
And I asked him, I said, are you a veteran? He said, yeah. And he apologized. He was drunk, just dead drunk. And he said, I've been celebrating my ex-fiance's birthday today. And he apologized. I said, all right, okay. And so I said, did you enjoy it? You know, and he said he was been in 8 years and everything. I said, why'd you get out? And he said, well, you know, I thought I was going to get married, and that didn't work out. A lot of things didn't work out. But he reached over to his collar, and he said, I promoted myself to Brigadier General. He had a star on his collar. Mm-hmm. That hit me to the core. This
why
is
that?
A man, because this is a man that had a vision in the military to climb to the highest ranks, and he didn't get there. But he himself, in his own mind, he was a soldier. And every case is different, as we talked about down there.
Sure.
You got individuals living down there, could have been their family,
anything,
upbringing,
anything.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But,
everyone's got a story.
But when you go to sign up for the military, the Army,
mm-hmm.
8 out of 10 are rejected because they...
Really, that many?
8 out of 10. 8 out of 10 it is. It used to be 7. It's up to 8.
You have to, now, is it true you have to be a high school graduate now?
I think so.
GED,
yeah, they used to bring them in earlier. But if you have a police record, obviously you can't.
Right.
If you're overweight, you're physically unfit, mentally unfit, you don't have it. Police records, all of this stuff.
What gets me, though, is they let foreigners
yeah,
who are not
yeah,
citizens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an avenue to get.
That's really scary stuff, isn't it?
To me, it is because
there's no loyalty there.
Yeah, because you're allowing anybody from any nation to
teach
come
them
in.
Lethal skills.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to use on us if they choose
yeah,
to do so.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I mean, they could take
it harder for our guys to take those guys down.
Yep. Yeah. No, there's some real issues there. But here's the thing: when a kid is 18, I don't say kid, young man, young lady.
Mm-hmm.
They can't afford to go to college.
Right.
And they feel like, well, I have certain skills.
Right.
I can do things. I can contribute
right.
to my country.
Right.
I will sign up.
Right.
And they become, let's say they are accepted. Now
yeah.
you got this 2 out of 10.
Uh-huh.
And he or she has got, you know, innocent is what I call.
Okay.
Brought up by nice families.
Yeah.
Taught to, you know, obey the law, do all the right things,
mm-hmm.
Take care of themselves mentally, physically, and everything else.
Keep people right.
And then we turn them over to our United States government
right.
who deprograms them into defending our country, which
yeah.
we need. But they become train killers and whatnot, defending our nation. They see their friends killed, their comrades.
They have
kill.
To kill.
Yep. And after maybe one or two tours, they say, I've had enough. I want to get out. And there's an OD programming now. They get discharged, and their friends that they went to high school with and now graduated from college in a whole different realm. They don't understand.
Whatever.
Yeah, they no longer have anything in common. And the family doesn't understand them.
And isn't it also where it was during the Vietnam War, where guys would be one day and out in the rice paddies fighting and carrying on. 2 days later, he's at home having dinner with his family, with his mom and dad. Never got a chance to debrief and get things together. Just boom. And the camaraderie, they can't talk to the parents about what they just was going through 2 days ago.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you.
I got here so quick.
Yeah, I did not serve in combat. I was blessed, and that's why I'm putting it all on the line today for those that did.
Sure.
Now, when I got discharged, I was stationed at Schofield Barracks, U.S. Army, Hawaii, which is the largest training facility, 25th Division, everything. Over 16,000-acre post.
Wow.
Huge. But when I went, now, Hawaii, they call it the Pentagon of the Pacific because everything that went to Vietnam
went out of
Hawaii, the Marine Corps or whatever.
Sure.
And if you came back in the black plastic bag, you came back
to Hawaii.
Be at the Army, Navy, wherever you were assigned. And when I got discharged, in Hawaii, they respected the military. I mean, you had many people who were civilian workers there.
That's a military town, Hawaii.
Very much so. They respected many of the Hawaiians over there, even served in the military.
It's funny how Obama didn't learn patriotism while he was there. They must have really drilled him with that communist stuff.
Boy. He missed that one. But you know, his dad was a World War II.
His
grandfather was a World War II.
But his grandfather didn't like the country.
Yeah,
well,
he just had the wrong people, and we know that is. Yeah, but
well, just because you're a veteran don't make you right either.
No, that's true. Timothy McVeigh was a veteran.
Who's that?
Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, and Benjamin Arnold. Yeah. What's his name? No, Arnold Franklin. No, what's it? Jefferson Benedict. And Benedict Arnold.
Yeah, he was general.
He was a hero. He won several battles, apparently.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I'm very much in that. Just because you're a veteran doesn't mean you have these entitlements and all the other stuff.
Of course not.
And I look for those that bore the brunt of the battle.
Yeah.
And I say that because these are the innocent minds that were changed, and there's no safety net. But going back to that, when I we got discharged, and I was 1967 July, which was the summer of love, the mm-hmm. Haight-Ashbury.
I remember that,
San Francisco.
Right.
And they forewarned us going when we were discharged, you know, do not respond, react, whatever you see. You could end up in jail.
Yeah.
You want to get discharged, just keep your head going. So I'm on there, and I'm walking through, and I'm with guys coming from Vietnam. These guys chest full of medals and everything else.
Yeah.
People spitting and calling you names and everything else. And I'm thinking, my God, for the first time, I have faced the enemy on my own soil.
Yeah.
How do these guys feel? Yeah. Well, we went over to Oakland Army Processing Center because they put us on this old gray army bus and said, you're going over to Oakland. And they said, what you saw here is child's play. I had no idea. Farm boy from Indiana and living in Hawaii. What are they talking about, Oakland? And
home of the Black Panthers, man.
Yep, yep. And so when we got over there, they had the entryway where we were going all fenced off, and they were throwing eggs and everything.
Stop it, really?
Yeah, the whole works. So we get inside, they line us up, and the sergeant said, okay, you know, soldiers, they said, and they gestured outside, and he says, this is what you've been fighting for. So what? You know, I mean, freedom of speech, I guess, and all that. But they processed us out, gave us our travel money, and they said, okay, you're out. Now, you know, if you want to go to the San Francisco airport, you can take a cab, you can walk, really don't care. You're on your own.
You're on your own now. Thank you.
Yeah, they
don't
said,
call us.
Yeah,
we won't call
they
you.
They said you had 30 days of travel where you could go standby so that if you went, fortunately, I went back to Indianapolis. Saw a lot of my old friends, and they laughed at me. I was making $220 a month, and I was real proud of my service. I served on the in the commanding general staff, and I was a driver with the chief of staff.
Right.
But what was interesting is that I realized I couldn't live back here like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to Hawaii then, so I had my travel time, and it was much different for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. If you come back to your home and you're not welcome, particularly Vietnam veterans were not welcome. And that was troubling to me. And so I know that if that affected me just to somebody
just that, on that level alone, yeah. let alone being in combat,
yes,
that could have done
something. Yes, yeah. And so I really believe there's a huge...
But, Bob, I also heard, though, that something like 60,000 Vietnam veterans committed suicide.
Yeah, there's more that...
more committed suicide than died in combat.
Yeah, on average, 22 a day across
the nation. And what do you attribute that to?
Multitude of reasons. We don't know.
But isn't it, though, that our military has not set up a debriefing system for these guys?
Oh, that failed along. I mean, these guys are 60, 70 years
that's
old. That
saying.
Should have been done 40 years
ago. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, and they're not doing it today either, are they? No, they're not debriefing these guys,
no.
are they?
Well,
they send them back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Tomorrow is the 40th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, the end of the Vietnam War,
right.
40 years ago.
You know, it took you to tell me that.
Yeah, 40 years.
The rest of the country doesn't know that.
No, it goes right by. 40 years ago tomorrow, on April 30th, fall of Saigon. And, of course, we know...
You know what I'm going to do one day? As you mentioned this stuff, just think it out loud. Someday, if we get the platform, I would like to... Maybe you can do this. There needs to be a day when all the Americans in this country just really, really pay attention to this, the 40,000, you know... 40 years ago when that happened. We need to pay attention, especially immigrants. People who come here don't know what they're walking on.
Yeah.
Therefore, they can't really appreciate the freedom that they experience.
Yeah. This is the forgotten war. There's no doubt about it.
Korea, too. They forgot all about those poor guys.
Yeah. But again, what I'm trying to focus and centralize on this is that if we can establish a... state of emergency, a crisis housing.
Right.
40 years ago, 50,000 refugees were sent to Camp Pendleton.
Right.
Vietnamese refugees.
Right.
They are productive citizens. You ought to read the current issues of the Orange County Register.
Uh-huh.
Each day they talk about different segments. They have photos of Camp Pendleton.
Was that right? So they're celebrating over there. They're commemorating over there in Orange County.
Exactly. Yeah, but that's the heart of it there. We don't know that. And my gut... tells me that if we can reach out to that community and let them know that here in Los Angeles, we have the biggest VA in the nation and it's being abused and misused, how can you come in and say thanks to those men that went over there on your behalf? And I just think we're missing everything right now.
I just got an idea, folks. Just got an idea, Bob. I know some people in that community. I know the connections
Let's go
to the
down
community.
There.
Let's arrange that. Good idea. Good thinking.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I want to go
see,
down.
See, folks, this is why we call him the commander. Actually, we call him Patton Jr. You want to see this guy operate, man. Don't let his nice fatherly look deceive you because he's got brand new shiny combat boots steel-toed.
Follow me.
or get kicked in the butt if you're in front.
You bet. Lead follower, get the hell out of the way, as the old man said, you know.
So he's got these brilliant ideas and things, and his old Veterans Guard that are out there every Sunday afternoon from 1 to 4 o'clock, faithfully. These guys have been doing it for 7 years. I go out periodically. I don't get out as much as I would like or should get out there, but Bob primarily and some of the other guys, they've been there, and women just staying tough, folks. And if it wasn't for this guy, or that your host here, Bob Rosbrock, and his tenacity, the big developments that you're beginning to hear about over at the Veterans Homeland, i.e. the VA Center, the largest in the country, all of that, no matter what you hear out there now, because people are going to start trying to claim glory, if you want to call it that. We don't call it glory. We call it getting a job done. It's a duty. But there's going to be people out there going to want to play on this. They're going to say that they started this or they did that. I'm telling y'all something, folks. You got the horse right here. That's Bob Rosbrock. That's the guy who made all of that possible. He could have walked away 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, but he decided to stay. There were guys there before him, too, tried to do something about it, and they did their job. God bless them. Thank you very much. But this man got a hold of it, and that's why you really need to stay tuned and really listen in to Bob's show here, because you'll learn a lot, and you'll get encouraged about what you can do to help our veterans.
Well, thank you, Ted.
Hey, that's easy, brother. That's easy. No, that was scripted. I read that.
I slipped it to you across the...
Yeah.
But, you know, but I mean, we'll say this, that you're right, that there were those who started before. I came across a guy who wrote an article in 2002,
mm-hmm.
and it was part of all the VSOs and the American Legion, the VFW, and he said, that, and they held a protest outside the hospital, and we're going to stay here until we get this resolved.
Boom, gone.
One or two weeks. Yeah. You know what's interesting is that a friend gave me the movie Gandhi. He said...
I saw the old version, the original version, and I saw this one too.
Yeah. But he said, you know, I want you to watch it because he said, you kind of remind me what you're doing. And he said, not on the scale, don't get... But he said, of what he went through.
Yeah.
So about 2.5 hours sitting there watching this thing and...
Yeah.
Guess what? Man spent 2.5 years in jail. In that 2.5 hours, it was a long life spread out.
That's right.
And they shows him at 74 getting killed, and he was like 30 when he threw him off the train and everything.
Yeah.
But this is what's happened to our nation. We're a movie-oriented. If we can't do it in 2 hours, I'm out, you know.
Well, this is why we've got to come up with ways to inspire the lumpen proletariat. The people who are, as you pointed out early in the conversation, who are stuck primarily with going to work, legitimately so, trying to take care of their families, students trying to study, things going on, and their minds, their conscious level is very small. So we've got to do like we do children, give them big things to look at and fun things and entertainment things, and then you kind of take advantage of them and take them where you want them to go. Because that's what the socialists are doing to our country. They recognize what we recognize, but they don't play fair. They go and lie to the people. They got a lot of gadgetry to get your attention and magic, and then they deceive them. And I'm saying we're going to have to do the same thing. One more point, too, I want to point out to folks on this patent issue. Back during World War II, when they really needed a general to get something done, who did they call?
Always.
Okay, old blood and guts.
You bet. Well, imagine if you sent him over to Iraq or something and you said...
They'll surrender. They'll surrender.
Yeah.
That's it. We don't want to fight. Yeah. Oops, we're sorry.
But you say, excuse me, General, now here are the rules of engagement. And he said, the rules of engagement?
What? What are you talking about?
Let me tell you what my rules of engagement. I kill the enemy before they kill me. Okay,
yeah, that's right.
That's the rule.
And let those other poor SOBs die for their country.
That's exactly
you live
right.
For yours.
And that's why they won World War II.
That's why they won.
Yeah, and that's why we in Vietnam they just kept sending our troops in on the ground, and it just
Shoot unless being shot at, and if their back is turned to you, you cannot shoot.
Yeah.
What guy just shot at me, and he's running? Why can't I shoot? Yeah. Oh, man, did they tie up you guys, man.
But you're right on all that, and that's why we've got to use the patent strategy of the revolution here.
Yeah.
We're peaceful demonstrators, as you know.
Yeah.
Many opportunities to probably strike back and get hostile. We've talked about many ways of, you know, cutting the chain, driving over that front gate and all the other. But you know, we're going to win it. As we know that now the secretary of the VA is supposed to come out in June.
Now, who is the secretary of the VA? What's
McDonald,
his name?
McDonald.
Now, what was he before he became the
Well,
Obama
he was big. He was
him.
The CEO of Procter & Gamble.
Really?
Oh, he was big. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. No, he, again, you know, he was a West Point graduate.
Uh-huh.
And
so he knows about duty, honor, country.
Yeah. He messed up on some stuff, but we're all... You know, prone to do that. But I guess what my issue is that he has this wherewithal, but he goes on this same old corporate level. And guess who? When he comes in, he finds out about this deal out here, and who did he call upon?
Well, Patton Jr.
No. Oh. We had a little
you had
meeting.
To crash him. That's right.
Yeah, we had a meeting with him about a week ago. Remember, Mr. Shriver?
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't call on, and he's not a veteran. Again, Bobby's Bobby. I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah, no.
We're hoping to heal that wound.
Yeah.
But why did he? I'd sent him numerous emails, and I had articles and everything else, and he knew from the Passover, from the Shinseki, about. Who we were and what we stood for.
He was definitely briefed.
Yeah, and I mean, I won a judgment against his executive director for violating our constitutional right to free speech.
Right.
So you had a person...
Both what Bob did when he speaks to that 6 years ago. They weren't getting too much attention, you know. The system knows how to play you off. So Bob, understanding the distress signal of the U.S. flag, some people turn the U.S. flag upside down, some in the protest, because they don't know. They think they're degrading the United States when they do that. When in actuality, when you turn the U.S. flag upside down, you're saying that there is a distress situation, life and property is a danger. Help, help. It's like an SOS signal. So what Bob did out at the Brentwood, at the veterans' homeland, is this gate on the corner of Wilshire and San Vicente, and thousands of cars go by there every day. And so what he did on one particular Sunday, oh boy, did he do it. He posted a U.S. flag upside down, folks. This guy, okay, like a hippie. Anyway, no, he's not a hippie, but the hippies didn't know what they were doing. He knew what he was doing. He posted it, and sure enough, he got a rise out of the federal police. And guess what? They told this veteran, you got to take that down. Why? Because you can't do that. It's against the law. What do you mean it's against the law? It's my freedom of speech. You're going to go to jail. Take me. And they took him to jail 7 times. And guess what? He won. We won. The veterans won.
That's right, we.
And it changed the whole thing because it led to all kinds of other lawsuits, and the cancer has been opened.
You're absolutely right, because there's a reason in the United States Flag Code it says when life or property are in danger. Well, our situation was life
and property.
Never before in modern day history did anybody have the right to hang that flag in distress than we did.
That's
on our own veterans' home.
That's right.
On U.S. Federal property.
That's right.
And they didn't like that message. Now, remember, for 66 Sundays, we always hung the American flag right side
That's
up.
That's exactly right, folks.
Yep. And I've got photos where you folding it from your old Boy Scout days and everything else.
Yes.
Very patriotic in what we did.
Yes.
And as soon as we hung it in distress, they went berserk.
They went berserk, and they walked right into what it was designed to be. It made them face the truth.
Yep.
And since that time, folks, this whole thing has turned around.
Be well.
And Bob is still out there with the old Veterans Guard every Sunday from 1 to 4 o'clock on the corner of Wilshire and San Vicente. You need to get out there. And also, Bob, this is every Sunday now when you go out there, Bob will have out there some Martinelli sparkling red grape. It ain't got no lick in it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to pretend.
Yeah, no, we have either apple juice, lemonade. And here's an interesting story about Martinelli's. It was founded in 1868.
Wow, 3 years after the Civil War.
Yep. Think about that.
Amazing.
Yep.
And 1 year after, no, actually, the Civil Rights Act of 1866 was passed in 1866. It was ratified as law into the Constitution in 1868. How ironic is that?
Yeah. And he, you know, that President Lincoln was killed in, what, 65?
65.
Three years earlier.
That's right.
Now, think about this. Here's a family-run business established in 1868.
Right.
And they, the Veterans Home was established in 1888, 20 years later.
Exactly.
Now, I wanted to tell you something. When you look at what's happened to that home that was deeded as a sacred trust to our United States government to provide housing and care for our disabled and homeless veterans, and it is in ramshackle. It is a simple disgrace.
It's been raped.
It has. It's pillaged, plundered, and everything you can imagine. But Martinelli's, here they are, what is it, going on almost 150 years coming up.
153 years. But for them, for Martinelli,
yeah.
1868, 153 years.
Yeah.
Because the Civil War was 150 years ago.
Right. But here's the thing. They've been offered to be bought out by Coca-Cola and Pepsi.
They didn't sell out?
No.
Oh, come on, man. They could be living fat and rich right now.
That's why they're not.
Around the world.
No. These are real people.
What's wrong with these people, man?
No, no.
Really?
They are real Americans.
What would you guys do if you had that opportunity?
Yeah, most people would. But you know what's interesting? Henry Ford said, when you put your name on your product, you won't compromise. Now, remember, their name, Martinelli's there. And you sell that name to somebody, they may start diluting that, the content, and this and that.
That's true. And your name, more than the money, will be colluded.
Yes, sir.
Corroded. Corrupted.
Corrupted, man.
Which one is it? Corrupt. Hey, folks, that's
Cheyenne. Our
you guys
engineer.
Know Cheyenne Hayes?
Yes, hello.
Yeah. Cheyenne Hayes is our engineer, man. Smart young lady. And guess what her last name is, folks? It's Hayes. H-A-Y, of all things, E-S. That's my sister over there, man. Better not mess with her. That's my family.
And this whole time, I've been doing this for you.
I didn't know till tonight that was my sister up in there.
Always Cheyenne. But she's super.
We Hayes come in all kind of colors, don't we? White, black, brown, red, yellow. Ain't that something? Male, female?
But Cheyenne, can't thank her enough. She's a super engineer. This whole Skid Row studio.
It's
Jeremy,
fantastic, folks.
Jeremy is just...
I'm proud of these folks putting this together.
Man.
Huge. Back in my day, 30 years ago, when I first hit the streets in downtown, nothing like this.
No.
We probably had a little something to make flyers off of.
Yeah. But going back to even Martinelli's there, it's just an upstanding family that it's my understanding that I think...
Are they local?
They're up in Watsonville, Northern California, yeah.
We should go visit them.
Yeah, about every four times a day during the bottling process, it's my understanding, a family member will stop, just take a sample. Nobody knows when or where it'll be.
Good for them.
Check.
Good for them.
Check. And that's the kind of quality.
Good for them.
But again... Yeah. Reflect on how they look after their product,
right?
And how we look after our product,
we
if
don't.
You will. Our customer, the
we
veteran.
Yeah.
It is so sad. And that's why I'm so proud to have Martinelli's, because they set an example, and I'm going to keep driving that example
Absolutely.
Of Martinelli's, the Martinelli's standard for our veterans' home. Because
that's great.
They have about the same, they had a 20-year jump on them.
It's not made in China, is it?
No.
You sure?
No, I know.
All right, folks, you heard him say it. Yep. It's made not in China, it's made in where? The USA.
You bet. Yeah, no, Martinelli's, I can't speak
enough of them, huh?
No. So, but anyway, I want to tie, the reason I mention that is the quality. And we don't have at that National Veterans Home quality.
Right.
We don't look at the veterans. Now, Rafer Johnson, you know, has a book.
Who is Rafer Johnson? Tell us. Y'all know Rafer Johnson is? Tell me Rafer Johnson is.
How long is this program?
Rafer Johnson did what my daughter did, but greater. He was a decathlon champion for the United States in the Olympics in 1960. Am I correct?
Yes.
And he carried the torch into the Olympics. And back in those days, young people, y'all didn't know, back in those days, black and white folks was not supposed to hang together.
We carried the American flag.
And let alone be out front as black cats, right? But here was a descendant of chattel slaves out in front carrying the American flag.
I'll never forget, I was just graduated from high school, and of course you get the news later, in Rome.
Sure.
But here was a man who would have had to sat in the back of the bus, but he was leading the front of the American United States Olympic team. But Rafer will be 80 years old this summer.
Amazing.
Amazing man.
Does not look it.
And he contributes so much. He grew up in the South in Texas.
Right.
Tough times. And his sister or his aunt moved to Kingsburg by Fresno area. And she got his father a job as a janitor, I think. And they came up. And Rafer, I think he was he mentioned that he was the only black student in there. But they reached out to him and helped him. They saw, this is a young man, bright guy.
Right.
I mean, he was like a straight-A student. Everything he did was...
Built like a piece of wood.
Yeah. But he had this leadership...
Quality.
...that took him and said, here, be the best that you can be. And that's, he has a book. It's called The Best That I Can Be.
Isn't he also now one of the co-founders of the world-renowned Special Olympics?
Well, they give the credit to Mrs. Shriver,
but he was...
Certainly one of the co-developers of it, and he has been the central force here in Southern California, the chairman in Southern California.
Yeah.
But this is a man who marched with Dr. King, was with Bobby Kennedy at his side when he was assassinated, and marched with Cesar Chavez, and he's marching with the old Veterans Guard of the Veteran
Revolution. That's right. He's in there big time, folks.
Yep.
Rafer Johnson, Olympic gold medalist. in here with Bob Rosenbrock and the old Veterans Guard, big time. I've met him a few times.
Yeah, he's a great man, and we're trying to push onto the VA now that book becomes part of their reading. They have a thing, it's called I Care, and the I stands for integrity, K, C stands for character, all of this, you know, it's an acronym.
Sure.
But I was talking with a veteran official today on that, and I said, you know, look, if you say you care about me as a veteran, are you the best that you can be in caring for me?
Oh, that's a good word, man.
Man.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Flip the script.
Yep. So anyway, we're going to be pushing. We want to have that out there. We want to make a lot of changes for the greater good.
Good. Excellent.
When you go into that VA, if you're a homeless veteran, and we bring you in, we're not going to give, from our standpoint, we're not just going to give you a key
and go to your apartment somewhere on the outskirts of Timbuktu.
We're
going to
make
sure
that we take care of whatever issues you have first.
Right.
And some may be able to go over there, some may here.
Right.
And we want to eventually get into the Dome Village concept where they can have that transitional housing.
It's important that they get that transition.
It is.
Because I found out there a lot of guys, and I found the same thing in overseas, in Australia and Europe, that when you give a homeless person who's been out in the street for a while a key in an apartment, they usually find a way back into the streets again because there's no camaraderie.
What's that with the old saying? You teach a man to give a man a fish, you fed him for the day. teach him to fish, and you fed him for life. And we've got to use that.
That concept will work. That's what we're going to do in the Dome Village concept. They graduate. They earn each step of the way. They earn it.
Rafer used that example at a recent meeting with some of the VA officials, and it was very, very moving. And he said, when a family has a child that has special needs, it's hard for them to admit it.
Yeah.
And they would be very happy if you just gave them, their child, a gold medal. And he said it doesn't work that way. You have to take that child out of its shell, teach them how to put on the uniform, to go out and how to practice, how to train. And he said maybe over a couple, 3 years, they get this little award that says they participated.
They did something. They earned it over a period of time.
But there's a transition.
Yes.
And he said that maybe they get this award that says I participated.
Uh-huh.
And the next year they get a bronze medal.
Yes, they worked their way up.
Then there's the silver. He said you have no idea what it's like to put a gold medal over them. They take it off and said, Mom, Dad, on the stage, I won.
Wow.
And he said, that's where we have to be. And that's what we have to do with our veterans.
Yeah.
We just can't give them this mollycoddle.
Send them off.
No, and say, here, you know, a little apartment and, you know, we'll get your monthly check and everything. No, we want you back into society being as productive as you
possible.
Were when you were in the military.
Yeah.
And I believe we can do that.
I agree with you.
And it's going to take work. It's going to take the participation of many people out there listening in.
Civilians, all of us out here enjoying this freedom, this wonderful life we have. Come on, folks.
You know, a guy came, I think I mentioned to you, a guy came out to me one Sunday, and he said, I'm familiar with what you guys are doing and everything out there, and he said, I've been reading, and he said, he read some of my articles, and he said, you say you got 20,000 homeless veterans. He says, let me tell you what you need to do. I said, what's that? He said, well, you need to get those 20,000 homeless veterans and bring them outside out here. And he said, block off the streets and all this other stuff. I said, really? I said, are you a veteran? Yeah. He said, no, I'm not. And I said, here, I've got some for you. I said, you go get 20,000 of your non-veteran friends. Because I said, we shouldn't be out here. This is your job.
Exactly.
It's not my job to be out here.
Good
but
word.
If I don't do it, who will? And this is the amazing mentality of them. Just, you know, hey.
Bobby can't help it, man. You know, it's just,
but, you know, he had it all figured out. Go on, get the 20,000.
Yeah, you go do it.
Let me clue you in. If I could get the 20,000, they wouldn't be out here. They'd be inside.
Right.
Okay, we wouldn't be protesting. We'd have them. But,
we're
going to be working on you know, in the military, if you lose some troops, if you get hit by a certain, they have a search and rescue.
Search and rescue.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And we're going to be doing that. We're looking to get, and this is our discussions.
Right.
And that is to have a bus.
Okay.
Just like what we went through up here at Skid Row. Big bus, and it said, search and rescue. And you know how you've got that big megaphone thing? If you are a veteran, particularly a Vietnam War veteran,
come to get you.
Get in there. Yeah. We're taking you. We're going to get you.
Yep.
We're taking you back to your post.
Yep.
And I believe we can do that. If they know that they can get away from that element and maybe get back to their friends who served.
Yep.
I agree,
Bob. I think you're right on. Folks, I think Bob is really on to something here. And again, coming from my experience living on the sidewalks with the homeless people voluntarily, there is a certain camaraderie. Even in all that devastation and filth and destruction and oppression and cold and heat, there is a camaraderie that develops there, and it's very important. Yeah. That's why a lot of homeless, because I said before, you can give them an apartment, they'll go up, but eventually they'll find their way back to their homeboys.
They need the camaraderie.
They need that.
It's called supportive housing. And that's why
they
have
their own supportive housing, as far as that goes.
Well, I mean, if you have mental issues or any kind of health issues, and they give you an apartment down South Central L.A., how are you going to get there? You want to take a bus? Or, you know,
especially taking medicine. When I have to take medicine, I forget.
Yeah.
I forget.
Yeah.
So you can imagine.
Well, after a point in time, you either overdose or intentionally, you know. And this is what happens if you don't have that camaraderie, that fellowship. That's when the suicide comes in, because there's nothing left. Because you make a very good point. When you're out there on the street, at least you have.
At least you got something.
Something.
Yeah.
And you can't put somebody in a room in an unknown neighborhood and think, wow, he's not homeless anymore. He's worse off.
He is worse
far off. And the problem we have right now are people who never served in the military, have never been homeless, making six-figure numbers, and who are telling you how
making
to solve
decisions.
It, how to make this work.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing they want is to end veteran homelessness. I said, how do you end veteran homelessness?
They don't have a clue.
No, you can't end it, because as soon as you think you get the last guy, there's another one and another one. And this country cannot sustain this endless check that's going to be paid out. You better start investing it into brick and mortar for future generations.
Yeah, right.
And that's where we have to be, not constantly sending these guys to, and so some slumlord is making money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of these not-for-profit construction companies making killings. Making killings. I remember several years ago, for a two-bedroom apartment, $250,000 to make a two-bedroom apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whew, that's a lot of money, man.
Yeah. Well, fellow veterans, friends of veterans, we're winding up an hour here. As anybody knows, we could go on forever. This is a long, long story. We've been out there protesting over
Maybe
7 years.
Maybe next time we can talk about the Civil War.
Yeah, we will.
We took off, didn't we?
Yeah. Man. But we've been out there 7 years. This coming Sunday will be our 371st straight Sunday. And those are 3 hours. And we still haven't accomplished what we want. And we hope that this one-hour session can enlighten you on what's going on. We need your help. We're not a nonprofit. We're not asking for money. We did something very special. We are an ad hoc team. We do pay whatever we have out of our meager pockets. That way nobody can buy us, if you will. And we will, stay and answer to the truth. Our board of directors are 20,000 homeless veterans. That's who we answer to. But we've got a serious problem here. This is a wake-up call. On this program, we start with Reveille, and we don't end with taps, because we got a long way before we rest our heads. And we will continue to speak the truth, to be the voice of the voiceless out there. That's our homeless veterans or disabled who have no voice. And as Ted and I drove through Skid Row today, it's painful. We're extremely grateful for Skid Row Studios for allowing us to share this message. And we have a saying that it's better to do right and have enemies than to do wrong and have friends. And you need to think about that one a little bit, because it's truth. We've got a lot of enemies, I guess you might call it. We've been called everything, lied to, lied about, everything you can imagine. But we speak the truth. And I would rather have them as enemies than to have these so-called friends that are unfaithful. So stay well. God bless America and the Veterans Revolution.
Hoorah.